himself a woman that loved to fish. Oh, yeah. One day at the tackle shop, his dream came true, and now for everyone he catches, she catches too.
Hey, Bubba!
She fishes better than you.
Oh,
hey, Bubba!
She fishes better than you.
All right, let's talk fishing here, and I think this is the continuing saga of.
Yeah.
We talked about favorite rivers in the West and then moved on to Alaska. That's where we're going to focus today, right, Navi?
Yep, part three of Floating a River in the West. We're going to talk about Alaska, and it had to be its own episode because it's expansive like you can't even imagine.
Well, back up for just a second. Russ and I know the story behind this, but our listeners may have forgotten you have extensive experience up there, not just on a personal level, but once upon a time you worked up there counting fish.
That's correct. But I have extensive knowledge of those other rivers, too. I just don't talk about it. But, yeah, I know what I'm talking about. And when I was looking at Alaska, I thought, where do I begin? Because I've been telling the listeners, you know, a good dozen or so rivers, you know, on the all the states. But you can't say that in Alaska. And it's in the hundreds. And that's not an exaggeration. Dare I say 1,000 rivers would not be an exaggeration. And in point of fact, in 1959, when Alaska was lobbying to become a state, Texas lobbied against them, and Texas wouldn't give them the vote, and they couldn't become a state. And so the governor of what was then Alaska Territories said to the governor of Texas, if you don't stop lobbying, we're going to cut our state in half and make you third. So that shut them right up, and in 1959, Alaska became a state. And I'm not exaggerating. It's that immense. You can't even there's no way I could cover the rivers. So I decided to pick 12, my favorites maybe, 12 that I have intimate experience with. And the rivers I'm looking for in this segment is, you know, intimate rivers, like fly fishable. Because there's a lot of monster rivers up there that you just don't really want to fish because they're too large. So let me start by saying that I'm going to use the local terminology, you know, because when people come to Utah, you know, and they go down to Hooper and they listen to Weber State games as they drive to Tooele, you know, Tooele, whatever
Tooele,
that's
Tooele.
How it is. So in Hooper, we listen to Weber State and we drive to Tooele. So I'm going to talk about these rivers in the accent of the Alaskans. So I'm talking about rivers mostly in the western part of Alaska that access the ocean, so they have great salmon runs. But I talk about them because they're loaded with rainbows and they're really intimate, even with dry fly fishing. And when I dry fly fish Alaska, there's only one fly to throw, and that is a mouse or a lemming. You're basically going to throw a mammal and slowly drag it across the surface. And we're talking 100 rainbows on a mouse in a day is not out of the question. So these are really good rivers that you can really do yourself. I know my my buddy Brandon O'Brien once went down a river that I can't even remember the name, but he used a chainsaw all the time to cut the logs out so he could get down the river. So these are wild rivers. I would look at a guide, but if you're ambitious like I am, which is basically a pseudonym for crazy, you can do these yourself. So let's name my favorites, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's the Nooshigak, the Kwijak, the Pongopuck, the Togiak, the Agulawak, the Angovainik, the Kinektok, the Gulawak, the Aralik, the Good News, the Middle Fork of the Good News, the Gulawak and the Gulapak. I think I might have said the Gulawak. Yeah, I did. I listed the Gulawak twice. The Kwijak, the Gulawak, and the Gulapak are one-day floats. Those are easily navigatable with your feet, but a nice day-and-a-half float. All the rest are significant. We did the Kinektok in about 9 to 12 days. I'm talking big rivers. The Aralik is about a 6-day float. The Good News, 6 to 9-day float. The Nooshigak, we only do the upper Noosh because it becomes monster down towards the bottom. Again, about a 7 to 9-day float. The Pongopuck is about a 5-day float. The Togiak, again, about a 6-day float. These are phenomenal rivers. And when I mean phenomenal, I'm talking all the rainbows and salmon you could catch. And you fish incessantly because the sun doesn't go down. And these are rivers you really can't miss. There are so many others, I couldn't begin to start. I just went with one drainage system, and that is the Bristol Bay region. And these are rivers are all best accessible through the two cities, or I wouldn't call them cities, but villages. One of them is Dillingham, and the other one is, oh my gosh, not Quinnahawk, but Bethel. So Bethel and Dillingham are your access points, and major airlines, specifically Alaska Airlines, flies to those regions. And from there, you got to navigate which bush pilots you want. If you're going into Bethel, I think Papa Bear does a good job. If you're going to Dillingham, I like Freshwater. And these are guys that fly them daily. So, you know, you can die, as you well know, in a bush plane in Alaska. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Matter of fact,
real things to consider.
Yeah. We have experience. And I'm really happy that we have this memory that we shared, the three of us, and there were others with us.
Trip.
But down the Kinnick-Tock, and we went into Dillingham, and I had never been and never thought I'd be in, was it the Goose or the Otter? I don't even remember which one I flew in on. But it was a 1934 vintage or something.
1941 Gremlin Goose.
Yeah, the Goose.
And a 1944 Gremlin Widgeon. There's also a couple others, but they all have different planes, and they're all very, very talented.
Yeah.
I did this 23 years in a row.
Yeah.
So I do know about this.
The year we went, I was trying to document everything for everybody, and I put together a video at the end of it, which everybody really enjoyed. But I wanted to go in on the first plane because I wanted to be able to get video footage of everything that was going on in the setup and the landing and all of that. And the clouds were setting in. We were flying below the peaks, and we had some white-knuckle flyers even on a commercial flight that were with us, and they were on this plane. But I just kept telling these guys, look, this pilot – and I think he's the brother of or was the brother of the owner of the company that offered the service. I said he flies this thing all the time. He knows where he's going. He's he is his own radar system. And we made it safely, made a spectacular landing. But then we were the last only flight in because the weather set in and nobody could get to us for the rest of the night. That moment when the plane leaves your sight and takes the turn off of the lake around the corner is probably the most alive I've ever felt because you know if anything goes sideways, you're on your own.
You know, alive is the word, Tim, and it's basically why we do this. You want to push to the edge. If you know, like I say, you call it adventuresome or crazy. That's who I am, and that's what I love. And there is that moment when that plane's flying away. You know you got to get down there on your own devices. And if you don't get there in 10 days, the plane's not coming to get you because it comes in and looks around for you. Nowadays, it's better with sat phones. That's really helped out.
Yeah.
But it's a experience in your life that you should all do. So gear up, figure it out, get it done.
Yeah, great memory, Russ, isn't it?
No kid.
Yeah. The whole thing. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more fishing. Checking in with the Division of Wildlife Resources, we'll talk about river fishing close to home with Mike Slater. He's the Central Region Sport Fish Project leader. So stay with us.